to episode 124 of Cosplod, the podcast for all things cosplay and costuming. Yes, yes, I hurt my wrist. It is wrapped. I have a pinched nerve right now that really hurts. So counting down actually hurts.
You couldn't use your other hand?
When you're that heavily one-handed, you don't even think twice to do it with the other hand. I was struggling last night to use my tablet left-handed, which normally these devices, you know, are palm-sized. You can sit here and use it with one hand across most of the screen. You can't do that with a tablet. Tablet's too big. So you have to lay it down and then kind of get around muscle movements that I don't generally make with my left hand and try really, really hard not to reflexively use my right hand.
We gotta train
that's
you.
What happens.
We gotta train you to be ambidextrous.
No, it's not in my genetics. If you put an instrument in my hands, magically I am ambidextrous, and that's it. And poi spinning. I can do that with either hand. That's it. No more.
Amber's all broken.
I am. My body has been trying to kill me for the last 2 weeks with various ailments that have not been pleasant. But hopefully I am on the mend, and this will pass. This too shall pass.
The joys of being 30, everything just goes downhill.
It's not even age. It's one of those things where it's just like, oh, hey, you have certain genetics. Congratulations. Now you're prone to all this other stuff.
I still contest that ever since hitting 30, health has been degrading so slowly.
I am prone to every one of the things that have hit me in the last 2 weeks. And I have been for many years, so these are not new things. But it has not stopped me from working on cosplay, thankfully.
Clearly not.
Although it does hurt a little bit more as I am doing this. Because, of course, I have to sew right-handed. Because I'm right-handed. I don't know how to sew well with my left hand. And of course, when you said the joy of sewing to me the other day, it was like, okay, I need a fro, need that soft jazz music. You know, we're going to do a happy little sewing project today. So let's have them run all the colors of the thread across the screen that we're going to be using today in the order that we're going to be using them. And in the meantime, my work is now prepped on my work surface. Let's go on up here. It's like, wow, I've been watching way too much Joy of Painting lately.
Yeah, you have. That's just a little too much.
Sometimes when you need to de-stress, Bob Ross is the ultimate de-stressor. I don't even necessarily watch to see his technique because I know the technique. I just watch to listen to Bob and to see him do pretty things with paints. So mostly I've been doing a lot of hand basting lately, which I don't normally do, but in my advanced age, which is actually that advanced, I have noticed that things will go together better in puzzle piece form if you hand base them first, before you machine sew them, so that they actually sit where you want them to sit, in the way you want them to sit. And so I've been basting, and when I based within the... because I don't always take my basting out. I kind of use it as a form of really crude stay stitching, which it does serve that purpose, so I will basically baste kind of halfway in between the seam allowance, and then I'll pin everything together and toss it under the machine. My poor, poor machine has been worked so hard over the last week. Because I have figured out why formal suits and blazers, which this is the core of my blazer, it is now, the core is done. They take for freaking ever. This is why blazers are so expensive. It's all labor. It's not materials. And this isn't even a complete blazer because I lack a lining. I have facing in here, but I don't have a lining. And usually blazers have 3 layers, if not 4. Sometimes they have interfacing. So it is still somewhat heavy, and it's much nicer now that I hand basted the portions first. All I have left is just to insert the sleeves, and then it's done. And I actually tailored this one really well. I'm actually pretty pleased with myself for that one. So coat's almost done. I'm actually basting the waistband for the skirt. Skirt is already cut out. I have to do the ugly, ugly anime pleats. Because all schoolgirls wear pleated skirts in anime. and then stitch it down, and that will basically be the end of Umi's costume, which is great because I really wanted to have it done by end of September, since I have a wedding coming up next month and I have to make a bridesmaid's dress. And I bought my jewelry at Joann's yesterday. There is a 70% off coupon, which is only good through today. So unfortunately, by the time you guys hear this, it won't be any good anymore. But it saved me a lot of money on what would have been fairly expensive bridal jewelry. So that was a big help. Now I just have to buy fabric and sew a dress. Not to mention, also sew a couple of additional pieces for the costume I'm probably going to take to TRF next month as well, because it gets really cold in South Texas at night. You wouldn't think so in Texas, but it actually gets fairly chilly at night, and having a good heavy cloak can help with that. And I have my cloak, it's already pieced together and pinned. I would love to reclaim my pins, which have been sitting in that piece for a year now. I kind of need to sew it so I can take my pins back.
That'd be helpful.
Make sewing great again. Take our pins back. Either that or just buy another pins because you can never have too many pins.
Nice.
There are all these little projects that I want to do because now I want to start taking all my spare fabric and making work clothes. And I have this pink fleece that I'm staring at right now that, with all those nerd scarves going around Simplicity, I need to make myself a Kirby scarf that has the hood on it. I need to make myself one.
That would be cute.
Yes. And the fleece would be perfect for that, and I have plenty of it. It's like I can make that and I can make gloves, and I have enough fleece to do both. It's like, ah, oh, so many things that I want to do, so little time in which to do it, since, yeah, job, day job.
Cuts of
But I'm
life.
trying. I'm trying. I'm doing my best. I am actually making decent progress along with doing all the other little myriad things I have to do around the house occasionally. I decoupaged my other window so that people can't see in while having the window open. Plus, it adds insulation for winter, which is a bonus. I'm sure my neighbors probably looked at me a little funny when they saw me painting on my windows with what looked like glue, which Mod Podge really pretty much is watered down glue.
Yeah, it's
Yeah. But it worked. So now I just have to install weather stripping, and then I'm done with my minor errands. Then it's just sewing more curtains. Woo!
lot of house projects mostly.
Yeah, I ended up having, when you go to Joann's to match thread, you always want to take a swatch with you. You can't take a picture on your phone or your tablet and then go match thread at the store because it won't match exactly your fabric just due to monitor configurations and lighting and all that other stuff. Even as advanced as our cell phone cameras are, still not precise enough. So remember that, kids, if you ever have to match stuff, take an actual piece of fabric with you. Take a small piece so that they don't think you're some of their fabric. You're not stealing remnants, but do take one with you. Don't just depend on your phone. You'll be much happier that way. Because I had two very close shades of thread that I had to choose from. My phone would not have helped. It really wouldn't, because it was very close. It was like choosing foundation for your face. It's like you can be just ever so precisely off in your skin tone, and you can tell.
Yeah, and you can easily tell.
Yeah. So that's pretty much been my last 2 weeks. At least I've been productive.
That's good. Yay.
I'm getting stuff done, injured though I am, still getting stuff done.
That's still good. Any
Woo!
production is better than no production.
Yes.
All right, so my cosplay updates are going to be pretty minimal because last week I went to PAX, and that was about a 6-day vacation for me. So I didn't really have a whole lot of time to work on cosplay. That's the thinnest thing there. And let me actually screen share the actual thing as it's worn, because it's probably better to screen share it so you can see the actual thing. There you go. Yay! It's so pretty. It's so weird because it's very Lolita-like, and I don't do Lolita things at all. It's weird. I don't know what to make of it. But I had a lot of fun wearing it. It was comfy. I had one person recognize me. There was no near content at PAX, and the people at the booth could give two craps less about cosplayers because it's Square Enix. They don't care about their fans. But I did enjoy wearing it. I had a lot of fun making it. I learned a lot from making it, and holy crap, I probably won't make anything like this again. That was just a pain in the butt. But this costume is surprisingly not done. There's one detail that I didn't finish on this. Technically, no one really noticed the detail that I was missing, and I'll be happy to tell you exactly what it is. The pattern that you saw at the bottom of the skirt, which you can kind of see on my dress form, it's also supposed to replicate on the inside of the skirt. I currently don't have that right now. I'll be doing that over the next couple of weeks. But I will argue that it does match the original artwork, which didn't have anything on the inside of the dress. So, hey, as far as I'm concerned, it all works. And I'm going to make a couple little tweaks here and there to it. After wearing it, I found a couple of issues that I need to address. One thing is that the sleeves, for some reason, even though I Scotch-guarded and I washed it correctly, it still rubbed off on my gloves. So I left some very lovely dark stains all over my nice white gloves. Awesome. Thank goodness for bleach. And it was spandex, so it was easy enough to wash out, and they're clean, and I don't have to worry about that again. So I got to figure out some way to not have that happen again, because that would suck horribly. I'm going to reconfigure how I did the feathers on the sleeves. Right now, they're set up to be Velcro, just so I can easily attach them and pull them off and not have to worry about washing the garment with the feathers sewn in, because that's just a nightmare all on its own. And it worked pretty well, but I think what I'm going to do is add another layer of Velcro to the sleeves themselves, so that way the feathers can wrap around twice instead of once, and it'll help the sleeves gather a little bit better. So that's my thought. I'm going to test it on something first to make sure it works. And then other than that, the other thing is the lovely blindfold slash bandana headband thingy-mabopper. Yeah, when I made it, I made it to fit around my head before I put my wig on, which means I pretty much can't see squat. I can't really put that thing on after the wig is on my head. Whoops. So I need to come up with a way to make that work. And I'll be making a brand new bandana for non-convention uses so I can actually see and just take it on and off as necessary. It's things you learn that you don't find out until you after you wear the cosplay the first time. But other than that, I'm really happy with how it turned out. And again, I'm surprised at how comfy it was too, but it also helps that it was only like 70 degrees in Seattle. I mean, is what it is. But other than that, yeah, that's all I've got. I haven't had time to work on cosplay. My station for my crafting has been completely cleaned up, which is awesome. Like, this is the first time all year that my area is nice and neat and clean. That'll last for about a day. I took a photo of it and posted it on Instagram just as proof that yes, this did happen. And then it'll probably get promptly filled up once more. Now I'm at the point where my cosplay updates are figuring out all my costumes for next year and starting to gather the materials for that. Because, I need to not have space in my craft area ever.
FYI, for those who don't know, don't wash real feathers.
Oh God, please don't. Please
Or
don't. Oh my
even
God.
fake feathers, as long as they're actually the material that feathers are made of. Fabric feathers can be washed, but the textured feathers, please don't, because you will effectively ruin the feather, especially if they're real feathers. If you get turkey rounds and such, it will pretty much ruin the shape of the feather.
Yeah, these are turkey feathers that have been dyed. So,
Yeah.
yeah. And there are ways to clean them. You can still dry clean them, like taking like just a very light damp paper towel and just brush them on top, so that way you can get them clean within reason. And there are other things that you can do. So, I mean, I can still keep them fresh and new without destroying them. If you don't destroy the feathers, you can destroy the wash by doing that.
You can also take a very light if you get a soft toothbrush, then those actually work really well.
I think they gave me one when I bought the feathers. So I got like a pack of 100.
So if you ever need to put feathers on your costumes, if you ever want to wash said costume, consider
Right.
sewing them on or gluing them on, unless you have sewn or glued them to another fabric that you can remove, like with Velcro or snaps or hooks and eyes and the like.
It'll make your life so much easier.
Yeah.
Because you do need to wash your costumes, guys, contrary to belief.
Periodically. You can sometimes get by with Febreze if it's a very mild thing, if it's just like an odor thing, but it's kind of like putting Axe on somebody that hasn't showered. Not cover up the smell, and There's a reason for that. It's because of bacteria. You need to clean it. You can't just cover up the smell after a certain extent. Otherwise, we'd never do laundry or take a shower.
Oh no, I daily showers. I don't care. Daily. That's just nasty otherwise.
I'll rant about the whole convention shower thing later.
After session?
Yes, that can be added to the after session.
Because we do have a very, very busy and packed episode this time, because it seems like this week just news exploded everywhere and everything turned into a controversy. It's just like, hey, this is just writing an episode for us. Cool.
When is cosplay not exploding? All right.
Yeah,
So,
that's true.
since we have a packed episode, let's go ahead and move on to PAX.
Yeah.
This
And
would be PAX West.
this is going to be a pretty much a mini review because as I've said multiple times in the past, PAX is not really a cosplay convention. You go to play video games and you go to play new video games. That's why you're there. It is cosplayer friendly and there are people who do dress up, but that's not the majority of the convention itself. It's an expo where developers are there to showcase their gaming wares for the public to hopefully get them to pre-order or purchase said game in a couple of months when it releases. The costumes that I did see there, they were all fabulous and phenomenal, and some of them were so over the top that I had to sit there and wonder, how did you make this thing and why are you wearing this thing? Because this is so pretty and cool. And the expo hall itself is a really nifty location. They have this huge grotto in the back that is just ideal for so many different types of photo setups and inspirational images. I mean, it was just awesome to go back there and be like, there's this whole space that I didn't know about. Oh my God, this is great.
Usually, Wizards of the Coast or Magic the Gathering will set up a panel so that cosplayers can go take photos in front of, giant dragons and, figures from their various card decks and such.
That would have been cool. They had a really huge Magic tournament going on that weekend too. I think the grand prize was like over 100 grand. It was something absolutely ludicrous. And I was like, okay, this is a big deal. Lots of stuff's going on. Holy crap. A lot of Overwatch cosplay because Overwatch is definitely a thing. And we've definitely turned our Thursday into Overwatch Thursday on our Facebook page. So lots of Overwatch all over the place, all fabulous costumes. And people really had a lot of fun with it. Got to see some really cool techniques up close that I didn't think about before with Syntra and foam, and how the two were squished together to almost kind of make their own new thermoplastic that became much more moldable and bendable. I'll have to show photos of this later that I saw of this one woman who's dressed up as Mercy, which has this really intricate breastplate that has to be really, really close. And she used a combo of Syntra and foam to make it happen. It's just really cool detailed, and I think I might do a write-up of how she explained it to me because it just doesn't make sense, but it looks so good. And I hate thermoplastic, so you all understand that. As far as the entire experience as a whole, I enjoyed it. Developers this year didn't have a whole lot of big titles out there. It was a lot of content that they've either talked about at E3 or at Gamescom, which was just like a month ago. Or it's content that we already knew about and you can find it online. Like Capcom's booth, as far as like Dead Rising 3 and Dead Rising 4 and like Ace Attorney, it's all stuff you can download from their store and play the demo right there. They were showcasing a demo that was online. It was the same thing for Square Enix, it was the same thing for PlayStation, same thing for Microsoft. So it just didn't really feel as special as it usually did. And it felt like a lot of the hype that people had towards PAX West kind of died down this year. Now, I personally appreciated all of the indie games. I know the people that I was rooming with are not really big indie game fans, but for me, that was the draw. So it was nice to see new developers out there and get a chance to play out this cool content that you don't really get to see anywhere else. And I will say, compared to other PAX experiences, this one was probably the smoothest. The aisles were incredibly wide, which was fabulous. Like, this is the first time I didn't feel like things were overcrowded or that I felt squished. Like, I could move freely everywhere and there was no trouble. Like, even in my big creeper dress, like, no one bumped into me once. It was awesome. PAX is always going to be line con for everything and anything. If you really, really, really want to see something, make sure you get in line at 8 o'clock on the dot so you're the very first one in line. Things fill up super fast. As I found out with the Final Fantasy 15 demo on all 4 days, even though we were near the front of the line every single time, still couldn't get in. It just wasn't a thing. Didn't happen. You sadly got used to it, and it sucks. Though I will say that my favorite game of the entire weekend was Resident Evil 7 VR. I am not a VR fan. I actually think that it's gonna die out, kind of like how the 3D thing did. Like it's just a quick fad. Like it's here and it's gone. After having played Resident Evil 7 VR, yeah, this I'm gonna change my opinion. VR is going to be astronomically big because Resident Evil 7 scared the crap out of me. Not literally, figuratively. It was so dang good. Like, I actually felt my heart racing. And I don't get scared very easily. I love going to haunted houses, and I'm the type of person where I'll go up to the actors and be like, "Ooh, your makeup is super cool." Like, and I know you're not supposed to do that, but that's the type of person I am. I don't get scared easily, but actually playing this game and feeling my heart race and actually feeling my mouth like get a little dry and looking around the room and hearing the sounds, I was like, this is about as immersive an experience as I will ever get. And this is all through VR. It was creepy good, and I really, 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 really want to get all of the equipment so I can play RE7 on VR next year. So it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed myself. A Megathon. If you guys ever go to PAX, you have to go to the Omegathon events because those are just a blast. For all the live streams that they do of those, it's so much better in person because everybody gets involved in it. We're all yelling and screaming and cheering and laughing at the contestants as they fail horribly at Super Mario 3.
With infinite lives.
With infinite lives on Game Genie. Man, that second player, he just could not stop falling in the hole on the second level. I was just like, dude, stop, stop. You're hurting. You're hurting my brain. It's so bad. It was a lot of fun. I would say for people who are interested in going, start saving up and make sure you camp out the PAX Twitter feed because those badges go out within 5 minutes. They are quick and easy to go. Make sure you book your hotel room because that's very important that you do it all in one run. Otherwise, you will not find a place to stay. And I'd say for, upcoming years, it seems like PAX is going more towards indie games, less the big name developers. At least that's how it feels like to me. Maybe that'll change. Maybe some big names will get announced later on and things will be different. So if you're really into indie games, go to PAX. Be aware that you need to be very, very much okay with line standing. Because if you don't like lines, don't go to PAX. You're just going to be wasting your time and be miserable about it.
Note that that will probably affect your cosplay choices too, knowing that you have to stand a lot in one place.
Yeah, I did it in my 3-inch heels. If I can do it, you can do it.
I'm not referring necessarily to the shoes you're wearing, but say having giant wingspan, having very heavy armor, having things in which you cannot move very well, that sort of thing.
Yeah, there is, especially with PAX West, it's not so much with the other PAXes, but with West in particular, because it is so big and there are so many people on the level of like San Diego Comic-Con numbers of attendees. They do have pretty strict rules in their expo hall regarding cosplay and photography. No photos in the expo hall. If you want a photo of someone, you need to pull them out of the hallways and then put them in a booth. And you can take photos in a booth, but that's like the only exception. No large props, no wingspans. I mean, you got to be pretty low key on your costumes if you actually take them into the expo hall. So it's not they don't discourage cosplay, and you can do it pretty much everywhere else. And they have a separate room in another building specifically for cosplay meetups and photography and whatnot, which is awesome. But yeah, their expo hall is pretty tight as far as cosplay rules. So as long as you follow those, you're golden and you'll be comfy. And I got lots of swag. That's about it.
Awesome.
Simple, to the point, Meh. Meh.
Right.
Explosion
Time for cosplay explosion time.
of news articles everywhere.
See, this is where you need to put like flaming explosions within the episode.
That'll be easy enough. You know me.
Yeah, I know. All right, so we have a few articles that we want to share with you guys. These actually came out of various outlets on social media. And the first one I found that was in one of the feeds of the people we follow as CosPod is called The Changing of the Guard. And the subtext of this, not family friendly, I'm very sorry, is AKA the rift between old guard costumers and us goddamn millennials cosplayers.
You darn kids, how dare you?
So basically this article is somewhat implying that the old guard are costumers, people who focus on the craftsmanship of costume, less on the performance aspect, and it's a technical thing. And that they don't like being called cosplayers. No, we are costumers. And that these millennials, these new up-and-coming hip people, are cosplayers. It's all about performance. There's no skill. It's not a technical thing. It's a performance thing. It's a feel expression thing. That seems to kind of be what they're implying. And then they basically say, you know, the old guard needs to share their knowledge and the newer people need to be more respectful of that knowledge and share. And that, yes, there is a changing of the guard. Old people need to just get over it and stop telling us to get off their lawn. That's kind of the TLDR I get out of this.
Yeah, I think so. I kind of took that as that cosplayers also have a wealth of knowledge too, and that we both have, like, both sides have things to share with each other, and we need to be more open and accepting that there are different fields of costuming, and we shouldn't have this gatekeeper blocking the sides out.
I mean, more or less, the only difference between generations, the old guard and the up-and-coming generation, is we didn't have a lot of the new materials that they have now, nor did we have the wealth of tutorials and knowledge that is publicly shared. That's pretty much it. We're all doing the same stuff otherwise, just with different things and using different techniques, but we're all doing the same stuff.
Yeah. And I guess it really depends on the conventions that you go to, because at anime conventions, we don't really see this as often. But like at science fiction, comic book conventions, there tends to be, or fantasy conventions, there tends to be this really, I don't want to say obvious, but it does happen on occasion. And I've seen it happen multiple times where people say, no, I'm not a cosplayer, I'm a costumer. Whatever you're doing doesn't make sense in my world, and you don't get to talk to me because of it. And I think there is an age divide with that too, because it does feel like it's hard to approach those people for help or for knowledge or for assistance, or even just to get to know them as a general human being, not even as a hobby, because they see me in a video game costume and they're like, oh, you're a cosplayer. Like, you don't have any skill or craft. You just want to dress up like fantasy characters. And it's like, but aren't you doing the same thing? I mean, you're making your own stuff. I made my own stuff. You're dressing up as a fantasy character. I'm a fantasy character. Yeah, you may have made like yours based off of a book character, or it's like original design, but I'm just showcasing my fandom. So I don't. Why is there a gate? There should not be a gate. Stop it. It's confusing and it's perplexing. And it's also aggravating, because so many of those in the older generation, or have been in the hobby for so long, have an immense amount of knowledge. We've been to that Costumers last weekend a couple of times, and the people there have so much information to share, and it's such really good content. It just seems silly that they block that knowledge off from everyone else because they're not costumers. That makes no sense to me.
And there's a couple of things in the article that I much agree with. One, drop the attitude of superiority. That goes for both sides.
Both sides, yes.
I mean, neither side is more superior than the other. They're simply different. It's apples and oranges in some ways, and it's apples to apples in a lot of other ways. So we're all having fun doing what we're doing. We all very much enjoy creating things. Why not just share in the love of that instead of trying to lord yourself over someone else. This isn't a competition. I mean, if you're in a competition, that's different, and even then, a little humility is called for in terms of sportsmanship. So there's really no reason for the superiority thing. The other is that accept both hobby names are valid. Yes, you can be a costumer, you can be a cosplayer. That's perfectly fine. Both are very acceptable and should be included in the community. We shouldn't be tossing people out because of what they call themselves. Whatever they choose to call themselves is totally up to them because people have different definitions of costuming versus cosplay. That is fine. I do have one major problem with something she said in the article. And I'm going to read this verbatim. This post has gotten a lot more negative than I like my blog to be, so I'm going to end on a constructive note. This issue is trivial, it can be fixed. And if costumers choose not to, frankly, we'll just wait until you die out and continue having fun on our side of the imaginary line you've drawn in the sand. That's morbid. You should
It's
not be
very
wishing death.
morbid.
You shouldn't be wishing death on anybody for any reason. Seriously, guys. I mean, this is obviously my opinion, but just because they do things that you don't like or call themselves something that you don't like or refuse to share knowledge, that doesn't mean you should just sit there and tell them, well, I'll just wait until you die. No, that's not constructive, which is what you just said that you were going to end on. No. How do we resolve this? We accept each other's differences and choose to glorify the love of the hobby of creating things instead. That's a lot more constructive than we'll just wait until you die out. Especially because that really makes you sound like a superiority-enabled millennial. I mean, Val and I are still technically millennials, even though at this point we're kind of falling off into old guard territory. And I don't like this sort of attitude. I really don't. Because every generation before you had that same attitude, and it's going to keep going unless we actually cut this off at the source and just start enjoying the fact that we're making awesome stuff, dudes. Sometimes we do it even better than the set designers in movies. Take some pride in that. And don't sit there and go, oh, I'm better than you. Well, does it really matter in the end? Life's too short.
It truly is no different than when comic book geeks are like, oh, you're the fake geek girl. Like, there's this barrier between the core geeks and then everybody else who's entering the fandom because they just saw the Avengers movie or because they're a chick. I mean, do we really want to be like those jerkheads? And they're jerkheads. I can't say anything nice about them because there are jerkheads. There's no way to pass it. Do we really want to be like them? And I think most people do want to share information and have a good balance between costumers and cosplayers. And I do think that the actual issue itself is kind of trivial because that's a silly thing for us to argue over. It's like we all make cool stuff. There's no reason to have a divide. But I think for those people who are, set in their ways and say, no, it needs to be like this, just don't associate with them. Move on. I mean, there are plenty of other people who think a lot like you and who want more inclusion and less separation. Find those people, be friends with those people.
At this point, we keep complaining that cosplay is full of drama, that our community is too full of drama, and that, nobody wants to associate with it anymore. Well, then we have to change from the inside out, guys. This isn't something that's going to happen overnight. It's not something somebody else is going to do to change our own community if we want to stop that perception. So let's get started.
Cause drama.
Yep. Hashtag cause drama.
Cause drama all the way.
All right, next article.
Yay.
This is a perennial issue.
Man, it's just like, I hate that this keeps coming up too, which is just makes it so much more aggravating.
So this is off of HuffPo, Huffington Post. The title is called Blackface is Ugly and I'm Being Harassed: A Tale of Cosplay and Cosplayers Gone Wrong. And the subtext is We Gotta Do Better, Guys. Okay, so the TLDR version of this
Yeah, you need a TLDR.
boils down to accuracy versus perceived sensitivity. For those who are wanting to be uber accurate to a character including changing one's skin tone to the extent where it is obvious that you are not of that coloration naturally, versus those who feel that trying to portray yourself as a different ethnicity when that ethnicity has certain historical connotations behind it is wrong. That's the TLDR version of this. I'm not saying either side is right or wrong because that's for each individual person to decide. And that's not me being wishy-washy. It's that it depends on whether you fall on the accuracy side of the spectrum or the perceived sensitivity side of the equation. That there's no right or wrong here. It's just a matter of where you stand individually. No matter which side you fall on, it is my sincere opinion that we should not be trashing these people. If you have an issue with them, take it up with them privately. Don't trash them on public forums. Don't post it on 4chan and sit there and flame them to death along with half the other population. 4chan, it does nothing. It does nothing except inflame drama. And it's not going to make the problem any better. It's not going to make the problem any worse. It just makes you personally look like an idiot. So, no matter how you feel about it, take it up with the person in private, please.
For a little bit more details about the article itself, it came about where one person in another country wanted to cosplay as the, I don't even know what color her skin tone is. She's not quite African American, she's not Hispanic, but she's got this really beautiful caramel color skin tone. But it's one of the trainers from the Pokemon Go game. This person decided to darken their skin to match that color and immediately got a lot of flag about it for about, you're obviously changing your skin tone. It's considered blackface, blah, blah, blah. The cosplayer didn't see a problem with it because in her country, and this she's in a completely different location, they don't have a problem with racism, as she says. And so the person who was saying this is the reason why it's bad is now getting attacked by the cosplayer and her friends to the point of where they're actually posting on her personal Facebook wall as well as her fan page with threats saying, "Hey, I'm going to do blackface all the time now just to make you feel bad." Not, this is why cosplayers get such a bad name. So it's just like, guys, we know better as people. Yes, this all should have been taken care of in private, and they probably should have told the cosplayer, "Look, here's the reason why you're getting so much flack. There's connotations that go with it. If this is what you want to do, I probably won't follow you any longer." I mean, there's ways that you can go about it and still be professional and adults. But I think it also brings up more of that same issue of, as those of us with lighter skin, are we ever allowed to cosplay as darker characters? And that's always going to be a struggle with us because we're either going to get flagged for being racist because we're dressing up as black characters. How dare we take away those black, those Native American, Hispanic characters from the people who want to cosplay them, and vice versa. Do we lighten our skin or make our eyes a little bit more oriental to cosplay characters that are from Asia? I mean, the lines are there, and it's like you can't win no matter what you do. You're always going to get
And
caught in
you
trouble for
won't
something.
exactly, you won't please everyone because there are those who firm believe you should only, if you want to be accurate, cosplay people of your own perceived ethnicity because, we don't always look like our ethnicities. And then there are those who feel that anybody should be able to cosplay whatever they want, witness people cosplaying of those of different ethnicities everywhere. Now, the person in this article is of the former. She thinks that you should only cosplay those of your perceived ethnicity and that you shouldn't try and cross lines. One thing I did want to quickly mention, and this is not to stir drama, this is a clarification. If you do not know, blackface actually has a historical connotation attached to it. It had a purpose. It was used in very specific circumstances in the early 1900s to achieve certain results. And, if you want to educate yourself, all this information is freely available. Go look it up. So I'm simply saying that if you're going to have a hardline opinion on this, at least please try and
Educate yourself.
be educated about it. At least know what it is that you are for and or against. Because there's a lot of people who I feel are throwing around the word blackface incorrectly. They're using it in ignorance and they may not know. So please don't throw the word around just irrationally. Please understand what it means first if you're going to rationally criticize it. So that said, you know, you can believe what you will, but sitting here and calling people Mrs. Banana or Lil Ape on their Facebook is not going to help.
No, it does the exact opposite. That's what starts racism. That's what makes it so much worse and why we get such a bad label placed on our community. It still boggles my mind that they did that. Like, that they're organizing an effort against this woman. It's just, it's 2016, right? Mm-hmm. It is 2016. We should be better than this. As human beings, we should be better than this.
And also bear in mind that a lot of anime, which started out as manga is not diverse, you guys. If you look at the characters in most of our anime and manga, they're Caucasian or Asian. There are very few Hispanics, very few African Americans. You know, there are very few people who are not of those two particular ethnicities. And that's simply a cultural thing. So bear in mind that, you know, if you're trying to be stuck with cosplaying as to your perceived ethnicity, you may not have very many options. So I would just as soon say, you know, let live and have fun cosplaying.
Yeah, cosplay who you want. And I think that's the sucky part too, is because I would love to cosplay Sheva from Resident Evil 5. She's African. She's not African American. She's African. And I know, I would never darken my skin. It would just be my natural skin tone. But I know that if I even start working on that, I'm going to get flack for it. It's just like, I can't. There's just no way. People will immediately start calling me racist, or why am I taking away this one character and making her white? And it's like, because I think she's a badass character. I love her. She's cool. I want to be like her. But I know I can't, because I will get called all these horrible things. So I just stick to the whitest white characters I can possibly find, because I know I won't get any in trouble for it. And that sucks. That sucks a lot. I should be allowed to love and respect and showcase how much I adore characters of any ethnicity. But I can't, because I'm white. I'm waiting for all of the people to comment on that saying, but you're white, that means you get so many more options. Shouldn't it be cool, the fact that I like somebody who's not my ethnicity? Most of the characters I like are nothing like me at all. That's why I like them.
I want to cosplay Moana.
That would be
so much.
Oh my God. I'm waiting for that movie.
I even have the hair for it, but
you do?
I am not of Polynesian coloration.
Nope.
I do not want to put myself out there and have to undergo that kind of criticism for it, even though I think she's a fan-freaking-tastic character. And I think her compatriot, who is voiced by The Rock, is also really awesome.
Cool. He's so cool. Oh, man, it sucks. It sucks a lot.
Yeah. All right. And kind of piggybacking off of this, there was a post in one of the groups that I am a member of online that's regarding the Civil War Avengers Black Panther costume that they're selling for kids for Halloween this year. And in the movies, I don't know if this is true in the comics or not, because I haven't read them, but in the movies, Black Panther is African American.
Yep, it's true in the comics.
Okay, fair enough. The packaging is worn by a Caucasian kid. And so they're kind of sitting here going, well, this is one of the few African-American characters that exist in comics and fandom. Why not let us have this one? It's just like, really, guys?
And it's really? The same argument again, is like, we have a kid who's white who probably really loves the character and wants to dress up like Black Panther. What's wrong with that? He's idolizing somebody of a different race. Isn't that a good thing?
Mm-hmm. And marketing, pretty much like going out in a costume, is never going to please everybody. That's why they have target demographics. they're not going to be able to please everybody. And so they may have chosen incorrectly with their demographic. That's totally up to the company that's selling this. I don't even know who it is because the picture is cropped. But either way, I think we should be kind of coming at this on the more positive side of the argument, which is to be inclusive, let everybody do it. You know, who cares who's on the packaging? Whoever wants to wear this can wear this. A girl can wear this if they feel like it. I have no problem with that. Rather than coming at it from the negative point of view, which is, oh, well, they're being exclusive. Well, why don't we fight that by being inclusive?
Yeah, and since the costume is a full face mac, full bodysuit, really all you can see are the kid's hands because of the
And
age
a
of the
little bit of
child.
the neck, but that could be fixed with, you know, a simple piece of fabric with a neck cowl.
But even still, how do we not know that that's a little girl wearing that costume?
True.
I mean, they're young enough that there's no way to really tell. All boys and girls at that age have pretty similar body lines. How would you know?
And the suit is muscled. The suit has padding in it so that you cannot necessarily tell the gender of who is inside of it because they'll look identical either way.
If we're really striving for this equality and this accepting of people, regardless of their religion, color, creed, blah, 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 do we need to stop getting off of our high horses? You know, it's okay. It doesn't matter who's wearing the costume. They love the character. Let them love the character. Again, this is gatekeeping bullcrap.
I
Gotta
mean,
stop being gatekeepers.
that's like saying, oh, well, because something is portrayed one way in media, that's the only way it can ever be portrayed. So Elsa has to be portrayed by Caucasian people who are actually blonde.
No.
I've seen little boys going around as Elsa. I have no problem with it. In fact, the little boy that I most recently saw in an Elsa costume was having the time of his life. He enjoyed it, and I'm good on him.
I see nothing wrong with that. Let live. Live, let live. I mean, seriously, it's supposed to be about fun. When we start putting all these labels and these restrictions on people, you remove the whole point of costuming and dressing up in Halloween. Let the kids have their freaking fun.
I mean, if you don't like it, feel free to write the company and let them know that you would like to see more diverse packaging. But other than that, I mean, we're people. We can cosplay what we feel like it. And that should be okay.
It should be okay, and it's sad that it's not okay.
I mean, if we get to the point, we acknowledge historical issues. We get it. We know that there are still some cultural issues with this. But if we're going to move past them, then we have to do it consciously and not keep fighting over these little things. Let's fight about the big things. There's already too much drama.
Yeah, it's like there's too much real world drama about the fact that there are people dying in third world countries from because they can't eat. Can we let's focus on that. Not about the type of person that is wearing a costume. I will keep shrugging and making faces because of this. Oh man. Ugh. Ah, people. People suck.
Halloween, go out in a costume and have fun.
Exactly. Just have fun. I don't care what you're dressed up as. If you
Eat
come to
candy
my
or whatever you can eat if you are, you know, if you are sensitive to gluten and sugar and those sorts of things. If you're diabetic, eat whatever you can. Just have fun.
I don't care what you dress up as when you come to my house. You will all get candy. If you happen to be wearing a Star Wars costume, it'll be more candy, but everyone gets candy. I don't care what you're wearing, as long as you're having fun.
And note, the stormtroopers are also gender insensitive. Boys and girls can wear them.
Darn right we can.
And girls do not have to be dressed as Captain Phasma.
Though, of course, last year with the packaging, it was a men's only costume until they fixed it.
Yeah, well,
You know,
it's fine.
it's fine. It's Bah.
All right, so more controversy because there isn't enough.
And this one, I went to the pit hole that is 4chan because I just wanted to be a glutton for punishment last night, and I found
Yeah,
the
you did.
full details of the story.
Yeah, no, you are a glutton for punishment.
I will say
So.
though, in defense of 4chan, it's kind of like Reddit, where there's a good chunk of it that's kind of crappy and you really should avoid. But there's this small section of people who actually have very thoughtful discussions and they're kind to each other. And surprisingly, the stuff for Nondescon was one of those small subsets of people. I was a little shocked.
So, we'll start with the TLDR version of this, as with all of the others.
Yep.
More or less, this post is for Nandesukan. And the winner of their cosplay contest that they had chosen as the winner had been chosen under the auspices that they had made their costume, because craftsmanship is usually a pretty big chunk of these whenever you're choosing the winners. The better craftsmanship tends to win. Apparently, they found out this competitor had not made the majority of their costume and had won grand prize under false pretenses. And so they made a post on their site about it, along with admitting that they had made a clerical and judging error that flipped two of their skit winners, you know, the difference between best in craftsmanship and best in category, and they needed to switch those. But more or less, they basically posted saying, you know, we messed up. We actually really, really have a zero tolerance policy against fraud. We're doing our best to fix this, and we're going to change things so that this hopefully doesn't happen again. The only thing that I would take away with this is, why the heck would you compete under false pretenses? Like, do you really need the cos fame and the prizes that much that you would fake the fact that you made your costume, considering that 99% of the time the judges can catch that, especially when you ask them questions about how they did it. Why would you do, why in the nine hells would you try and do that when you know that you're done? As soon as they find out you're done, your career's done. You've just besmirched the reputation of Nandesukan, and you've besmirched the reputation of the cosplay community. Just like, you know, faking your resume being a guest. It hurts you, it hurts the con, and it hurts the community. Why would you do that?
I'm guessing it was because of the prizes, maybe to get more recognition, maybe to actually get to that cos famous level. Here's a little bit of history about Nondescon because I read up a bit of it. So for the past couple of years, Nondescon has had less people interested in their cosplay community actually coming to their convention. They've had a lot of problems. They've had some people cheating under such pretenses in the past. And this year, they have overhauled their judging system. They added more prizes, bigger prizes, over $3,000 across all the categories, which is a huge amount of money. They've added new staff members, and they really wanted to show the Colorado cosplay community that they care about them. And they encourage them, you know, hey, come to our convention, and if you don't like something, tell us, because we are making this for you guys. So they really did go out with the intent of making things better. And then unfortunately, one person just took advantage of the system. Having seen the winner's costume and then the runner's-up costume, looking between the two of them, they're both absolutely stellar designs. One of them is Sakizo, and the other one is from one of the Xenoblade DS series. There's so many Xenoblades, I don't even know which one's which anymore. But as a judge, I was sitting there looking at both of these images of the costumes and going like, if I were judging this, I would have a hell of a time picking between first place and runner up because they're both absolutely freaking perfect. So I could definitely see for the group that won second place how just knowing that the person who won didn't give, you know, proper information on their judging form and claim that they made the majority of their costume when they didn't, that's kind of a kick in the gut. That's kind of saying, so the person who cheated won, whereas we made all of our content from scratch and we only got second place. That kind of sucks, and it puts Nandescon at a disadvantage. So I think one for them to come out and say, hey, this happened, we want to fix it, is kind of bold because most conventions don't do this. If a convention messes up, it tends to be kept behind the scenes, but they notify the cosplayers that are involved sometimes, not all the time. And they give them either a warning or tell them, hey, you're banned from the convention because you lied. So it was definitely bold of them to do that. And I think that's why it's standing out so much because this is unheard of. Conventions don't talk about this crap ever. At the same time, apparently this cosplayer has had a reputation for doing this in the past and has been banned from another convention for the exact same reason, which is just disheartening. So you'd think after that first time she would have learned her lesson.
And this isn't something where we want to have a cosplayer database. This isn't something where cons should have to cross-check you against other conventions to see if you've done this before. Most of the time, cosplay competition is on an honor-based system. They're trusting that you are being honest when you represent yourself in a certain way. And let me just say this as a warning to anybody. Hopefully, none of our listeners would ever think this way, but if you even consider trying to fraudulently win a cosplay competition, and you're doing it to be cos famous, to get your picture up everywhere, and to win prizes, you will be found out. And you're going to be cos famous, but not in the way that you wanted to be cos famous. And, Nandesukan definitely did a good thing to strip them of the prizes, so they ended up not winning anything. I potentially would have gone farther and banned them from the con because they've now damaged the reputation of the con. But Nandescon decided to ban them from cosplay competition. So, yeah, you're building a reputation for yourself. It's probably not the one that you wanted. You didn't win anything, and now you're going to be ostracized by the community for being a fraud and a cheat. So, you didn't do anything. Good job, Captain.
And the thing with the cosplay community is that word travels fast. We find out really quickly about information and we know content before it even happens. So if we know that somebody won and we've known them that, hey, they didn't make most of their costume, you build up that bad reputation instantly. So just don't even bother thinking about lying or cheating because it's just no.
We find out within hours, sometimes within minutes, if the people are actually at the event. And the community tends to be, as we have seen, very harsh.
We bring down the hammer. I don't think that this girl should be ostracized in the way that she is, though her friends are coming to her rescue a little too harshly and being way too aggressive against the people who are lambasting her. But I do think that the person that this happened to needs to be aware of the fact that what they did was wrong. People are not going to respect her or her craft in the future, and probably are not going to trust her in the future. So, making fun of her and pointing her out and just being jerks to her is definitely not the way to go. But I think she'll have to be very wary of who she communicates with in the future. That's for sure.
Yeah, so cheaters never prosper. Don't cheat, kids.
I did want to say talk a little bit about the 4chan bit that I did read. It's weird. I'm talking about 4chan in a very non-surly way. I'll say non-surly. I like that. So the piece in question that they believe was not to be made was her corset. And this was a Sakizo outfit. So if anybody has seen any type of Sakizo artwork, you know that it's very over the top, crazy, very fitted. And this particular costume had a corset with it that also had to act as structure for her wings that she had on her back. So it's a pretty integral piece of her costume. So far, that's the only thing that has been publicly made known that she didn't make. And she's actually even thanked the commissioner on her personal page, as well as on her cosplay page, thank you for making this piece for me. And that was the piece that wasn't properly listed in the judging form that she didn't make it. She claimed to have made it. And then there was this whole big discussion on 4chan about, well, it's just the corset. The rest of the costume is really, really elaborate because it's Sakizo. Does that, I mean, she still technically made the majority of it, so shouldn't she still be eligible for her award? And that's an interesting discussion all on its own.
Eligible for an award is different than eligible for the grand prize, which they won. Because you have to consider the fact that if you represent yourself as having made a certain corset, corsetry is not the easiest thing in the world. You're representing yourself as having a certain level of skill in doing non-standard techniques. So I think if you say that you made what looks like a professional corset, you have some technique. And I think that would definitely disqualify you from grand prize if you said that you had made it and you didn't, and it was obviously professional work. Because that drops your perceived skill levels.
And it's not like she could claim that she made 90% of the costume, except for like the tights and the boots and
Like
styled the
the wigs and the
wig.
shoes, which
Yeah,
is pretty
because
standard.
yeah, most people when they say they make the majority, it usually means, but I didn't make, my tights, my dancer's tights. I didn't make the wig from scratch, but I styled it. I mean, and pretty much every cosplayer knows this, and every judge knows this too. So when you say you made the majority, we pretty much think, oh, so you made the corset too. Okay,
Yeah,
cool.
most cosplayers aren't cobblers. We can't actually make the shoes.
Yeah, that I did it once. I don't ever want to do it ever again. It is such a pain in the butt. It is not worth your time or effort. Buy the shoes and modify them, please. So, when people were saying because the rest of the costume is so ornate, I mean, technically you could include the corset as part of that, other stuff, because she did still make the majority of it. My argument is, when you compare her costume to the runner-up costumes, no, she would have been bounced back a couple of points at that stage because she didn't make the corset, which is such an important piece of her costume. It may not make up for that 90%, but it's important enough that it needs to be included in that body of work.
Sometimes the winner is literally decided by 1 or 2 points. And that would have been 1 or 2 points.
Knowing that she didn't make that corset, I would have bumped her back and I would have put the Xenoblade group in first easily. And you know what? And there's nothing wrong with having commission pieces and going into a costume competition. Like if you had like your staff made, but you made the rest of your outfit. A number of contests do allow that, and that's okay. But be honest about the fact that you didn't make the weapon. Be honest about the fact that you didn't make your pauldrons or you didn't style your wig. You still may be very eligible for an award, it just may not be the top prize.
And this is different than admitting mistakes. I mean, we talked about this last episode when you're talking to judges, you don't want to hype the negatives. Having somebody else make a piece of your costume is not a negative. In fact, I would argue it's a neutral. Somebody else made this, therefore you can't judge my skill one way or the other on this. Judges know that cosplayers are generally not masters of all skills. So it's expected that you don't necessarily make 100% of your costume. So it's better to be up front and say, I did not make this, because that wipes it away from your judging score. It's a neutral, it's a net neutral. It's not one way or the other. But if you tell them nothing, if you don't say, I didn't make this, they're going to judge you on it. And if they find out that you didn't make it, then that's a net negative.
And lying about it does have consequences, even if it's not publicly done. There are always consequences. It may be that you're banned from future cosplay contests. You may get banned from the convention.
Yep, actions have consequences, kids. All right. New York Comic Con. It's its own segment. Good job, boys. All right. Let's warm ourselves up for this one.
Because I got two issues.
All right. So let's start with their weapons policy since they seem to have fixed this one because of the outcry.
And we know from past experience and from just talking to our friends and their own feeds, New York Comic Con has one of the strictest weapon policies of any convention anywhere. And it's been like this for years. So it's not like this is earth-shattering news, but this year it really took the cake. It was ridiculous.
So, most conventions are fairly lenient, I would say, on prop weapons. So New York Comic Con made a post on September 8th that they had an updated weapons policy. And more or less, and this I'm reading this from the post, prop weapons and prop firearms will be providing they are composed of foam or cardboard only. So that eliminates wood, that eliminates metal, that eliminates fiberglass, that eliminates
PVC.
thermoplastics, actually any plastics for that matter. So you're left with foam and cardboard. As any prop maker knows, it's really hard to actually make a prop with just those things and have it look realistic without using other materials with it. You know, for example, PVC pipe as a core, shellac or fiberglass to make it hard if you need a hard coat on it, celluclay. Yeah, you don't typically do armor very well unless it's made to be completely foam, purposefully. Otherwise, a lot of people use plastics. It's like, really? I can make a cardboard, if they're worried about people being hurt, I can make a cardboard katana that is solidly wood glue, hot glue, and cardboard, and I can bludgeon somebody with that thing. Seriously, it's not hard to give it weight. Basically, moral of the story is, if you really want to hurt somebody with something, including a blunt spoon, if you really want to, badly enough, you can hurt them with it. That's the long and short of it. I would probably say 99% of cosplayers are responsible with their props and they're not poking their fellow cosplayers with them. They're not beating them over the head. They're not stabbing them. Even when they do poses to take photos, they're not doing it menacingly. The only thing that they may have issues with, which given that it's New York, I can certainly understand this, and they do have, you know, background to stand on, is prop guns. I get that. Most conventions either don't allow guns or only allow them if they're completely gutted. Understood. But doing a blanket policy like this, it's like.
Especially when it's 1 month before the convention and they had the old
Three
rules, like
beats.
last year's. Yeah, it's it, last year's rules are still up on the website, so of course people were already preparing their cosplay based around those rules. And here we have less than a month to go, and now I need to completely remake my prop. Are you
Or
kidding
not
me?
bring it.
Yeah, and for a lot of people I know who go to NYCC because of last year and a number of photos of props in trash cans at the security desk, they just no longer bring their prop. I have a friend who has a Hasbro toy lightsaber, those really crappy plastic lightsabers that flip out. His prop got confiscated last year. NYCC's policy is ridiculously strict. So when that came out, ooh, the flood of comments that followed. Oh my goodness.
A con where they don't simply tell you, "We're sorry, this is not allowed. Please take it back up to your room." No, they take it from you right then and there. They confiscate it and then they throw it away. They don't keep them and say, "You can come and pick them up after the con." Nope. The trash cans are real, kids. They actually do throw them away. And I feel personally for those prop makers that spent, you know, 100 hours on a prop only to have it thrown ungracefully into a trash can. That's just wrong. At least, you know, store them and let them pick them up after the con. They're props. They're not meant to be anything other than props. And
And
so after the massive outcry,
yeah, within 2 days.
well, the outcry came pretty instantly because this was posted in a very prominent forum on Facebook. So it was seen widely. And, okay, I will be fair. There are two sides to this. One is the side that believes that you should make your voice known and try and get the policy changed. The other side says that if you don't like it, don't attend the con. It's their con, their rules. Understood. At the same time, it's my belief that if you don't say something, it's not going to change, and other cons are going to take it as a standard. They're going to take it as precedent that, oh, well, this really large con is doing it this way. We should do it that way too. And then it's going to spread. So you kind of have to put your foot down after a point and say, okay, well, if you're going to do this, then sure, your con, your rules. I'm not going to patronize you, and you're going to start losing mass amounts of money from cosplayers. So there was a large outcry, a very, very public outcry over this policy. And so Comic-Con, 2 days later, I'm sorry, 1 day later, posted an update to their update. And so they say, at the discretion of security on site, which leaves them a lot of leeway, the following may be allowed: plastic and metal, surprises me, lightweight plastic PVC props, lightsabers, toy guns, as long as they do not look like real ones, cannot function or shoot projectiles, which means they have to be gutted, and have an orange tip on the barrel. Now, granted, they say here, if any of the above items are deemed unsafe by NYCC security, they will not be allowed inside the building. They will only be allowed as long as they are deemed safe and will not cause harm on site. Anything can cause harm. And they didn't mention anything about trash cans and throwing them away. They just said they wouldn't be allowed in the building. So maybe they'll actually let people put them back in their hotel room if they're actually not allowed. And of
Hopefully.
course, with that post, now there are people individually, and we knew this was coming, now they're individually asking about all their props, saying, is this allowed? Is this allowed? Is this allowed? Because it doesn't explicitly mention it in their policy. And that's the problem with having some of these, is that when you have a broad policy, 3 weeks before your con, people are going to start asking questions because they're suddenly panicking, thinking they can't bring the prop that they spent 100 hours on or $100 on, which makes or breaks their costume. And for the most part, this policy does seem reasonable. I question the metal shields a little bit because if you're telling people you can't have things that can bring harm, well, an aluminum Captain America shield can actually do quite a bit of harm. I love Cap. I love his shield, but I've seen too many of those going, whew, that could do some damage.
And I think, as you mentioned before, the probably 99.99% of cosplayers take care of their props. They don't run into people. They don't swing them around. They're actually very careful with them, and they're mature adults about them. I mean, as I said to you in an email, I was really surprised that Reed Pop, the company that both also owns SDCC and PAX, two conventions with the most relaxed weapons policy and prop policy of any place ever. You can go in with a real knife, and they won't turn you away because people are adults and they know how to take care of those props and they won't swing them around like idiots.
This is also why you really don't want to be that guy. That's to say, that one guy that does something stupid because you're either trolling or you want the attention in terms of fame and gets everybody else's stuff banned. You really don't want to be that guy, I promise you.
It just takes one person doing something really stupid for all the rules to change.
With our local cons here in Dallas, they used to allow airsoft. I mean, I can remember the days when people brought airsoft and Nerf unmodded. And part of the reason that they were banned is because people were going downstairs into the basement and shooting out fire sprinklers with their weapons. And that's part of the reason why policy was amended that now all projectile weapons brought to these cons have to be gutted and rendered inoperable. So now you spent a lot of money on this prop weapon that you can't ever turn back afterwards. You actually have to fill it with epoxy, which is so stupid. Like, why would these kids have to satisfy themselves going off and shooting things in the basement and ruining everybody else's fun now? Because, one con started it as their standard and it spread to all the other cons, and so now no con allows projectile weapons that are operable. You ruined it for everybody. Good job.
Good job. Does it make you feel better about yourself?
I'm sure that they thought it was hilarious. And those sorts of things just really like anger me. And I'm sure that some of these rules were because somebody else did something stupid. Or the con is worried about liability should something happen at their con. I see somebody asking about the Harley Quinn bat, and those bats are made of wood. Yeah, that would be a liability issue because a slugger can do some serious damage to somebody in the wrong hands, and that's a liability issue. They'd probably be afraid of a lawsuit.
And then on the flip side of things, conventions do ease up on their prop rules over time. If they find that all the convention goers, I mean, sometimes it depends. If
Generally.
all, yeah, if all the convention goers actually follow the rules for a couple of years and they have no incidents and they hear people saying, "Hey, we really would like to get the policy, updated and change," and the convention feels that everybody's is paying attention, sometimes they'll ease up on the rules. Sometimes it'll get better. See, I mean, just be a decent human being, an adult, and stop playing like a little kid. It's okay to have props. Nothing wrong with that, and it's okay to pose with them. Just don't put them in the wrong hands, and don't be a jerk about it.
If you have any questions about the rules, contact the convention directly and ask them if your prop is okay. That's the rule at any convention, not just NYCC. That way you have official word whether or not your item is okay, so you don't have to worry about, bringing it and having it banned. If there is any question about whether or not Security Patrol will approve or ban it after you've talked to the con, print out that email and bring it with you. And don't wait until the last minute. Yes, NYCC made a blunder by announcing this policy so close to the con. That was probably ignorant. So don't add to the ignorance. Ask far in advance. And if you need to contact particular people at the con, get that info in advance so that you don't make this prop and then end up not being able to have it. Cons should do the same thing. Announce their policy well in advance so that people have the opportunity to ask questions, get clarifications well in advance, and then have time enough to construct their props within your guidelines. It's win-win for everybody, nicely organized, much less chaos. And many fewer comments on your Facebook page
About how horrible,
in the
horrible
negative
people you
sense.
are.
Yes. So now for the second part of New York Comic Con, their cosplay championship rules, which bad enough that they have billed themselves as the Eastern Championships of Cosplay. There's no cosplay authority board that allows you to call yourselves that, just FYI. It makes you look really, what's the
Pompous.
word I'm like? Yeah, that's a good word. Full of themselves, yes. You have a lot of hubris. And generally, cosplayers will look at that and just kind of roll their eyes. So just FYI for the marketing team, may not want to do that next time. Anyways, they had a particular rule, which you found, that had some question about it.
I think the way that they worded it was poorly, and I'm hoping that I'm reading too much into it, and it's not intended to come off in that manner.
And it is.
Well, actually, I have to open up the website. You probably have the website faster than I do. Hang on. Do, 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 do. We're gonna have some music in between while I pull up the website because I want to read this word for word if it will open. Hey, New York Comic Con, open your website, you monkey.
It probably doesn't help that I have Mario's athletic rag in my head because I
Nice.
watched the concert. If you guys need background music, incidentally, to do your costuming work too, or your cosplay work, whichever floats your boat. If you need background music to listen to, PAX West usually streams their concerts live, their Friday and Saturday night concerts, occasionally Sunday night concerts if they have them, on Twitch. And they are free. You don't even have to log into Twitch. You just open the page and watch. And then they archive the video afterwards so that you can watch it any number of times. And they had some really good, solid artists this year.
We did.
The video game pianist they had Friday night was magnificent. So if you get the chance, it's about a 45-minute long concert. Go and have a listen to him. He's very engaging and he plays very well. And he did, of course, a Mario medley, a Zelda medley, all that fun stuff. He even did some Final Fantasy stuff, which was really nice. And also the Super Guitar Brothers, which was
Yeah,
Saturday night.
that was
They also
cool.
did 45-minute long-ish concert set, which was, again, their usual fare, which is medley sets. Still solid, beautiful video game music, very easy listening in the background. You can just set it and forget it, and then just craft with it in the background. It's great.
It is awesome. Okay, so here is the rules, and I'm going to start. The first sentence I don't have a problem with. It's the second sentence, but I'll read the whole thing. This is rule number six on their website. To be judged for accuracy as a visual reference, please bring a reference color photo of the character you are cosplaying when you arrive for on-site check-in. You may not be eligible for accuracy points if the judges are not familiar enough with your character. That's the second line that we want to focus on. Because based on the way that line reads, at least to me, and apparently to a couple other people that have commented on it, if the judges don't know squat about what series or franchise your character is from, you may not get judged on accuracy.
And when accuracy points count towards the total, and usually the winner is selected by most number of points, that can hurt you.
That could hurt you majorly, especially with the way they break down their point structure. My hope, and I'm hoping it's just the way that they wrote it was wonky, and what they intended to say was if you don't bring in a reference, the judges can't judge your accuracy because the judges haven't seen everything. I'm hoping that's what they intended because, as judges for any cosplay contest, and Amber has and I have been there before, I have on multiple occasions, even at the last contest I judge, there were people coming in from series that I had no clue who they were. But they had a reference image. So I had a point of understanding to see, okay, this is what the character is supposed to look like. How well did they replicate it in person? I'm hoping that's what they intended. Just the way that it's written makes it sound like only popular costumes from popular franchises should enter. Everybody else should go home because it's not worth your time.
And we've even told people who enter in our contest that we've run, if you have an original character, that's cool. Bring in a sketch. Bring in fan art. Whatever you based your character on, bring that so that they know what you were trying to go for.
Because it helps immensely.
It does, and heaven knows there are so many variations of all the different characters now. There are fan art versions, there are art book versions, there are alternate universe versions, and not everybody's going to be familiar with everything. So it's usually best if you bring in a reference pick from which you should be probably making your costume anyway, and show that to the judges and make sure that you print it out. Don't bring it on the phone or the tablet because they cannot keep that with them. Reasons, obviously. So, run down to your local FedEx Kinko's and just have them print out, a little 15, 20 cent color copy and bring it with you in a little 20 cent folio that they have on sale during school supply sales. It doesn't cost much, but that extra little bit of prep can really help you.
NYCC is just full of messing up this time of year, I swear.
I know they're trying to do what they think is right. They're trying to accomplish specific things, but sometimes I really wish that they would look at current cosplay trends and consult with other cosplay contest coordinators. And I realize that between cons, that's generally a no-no. You don't want to spill trade secrets. It's not really a trade secret thing much anymore because rules across cosplay contests are pretty standardized. There's a few little tweaks here and there. I get that. Contests are trying to be unique, but in general, running cosplay contests is a pretty standardized thing now.
You can pretty much know what to expect when you're signing up for one, because it's pretty much the same everywhere at this point.
And when you're running one, it's pretty much the same too. Yep. All right, that is all I got.
Yay!
Woo!
Cosplay news explosion. So much of it, and just in the week that I have been back, in the 3 days that I have been back. Oh my goodness.
Yep, it went splody.
Splody.
So with that, we are going to call an end to this episode 124 of Cospod the Podcast for all things cosplay.
Woo!
You can contact us on all of our social media. We are happy to respond to you. As other people have noticed, we have actually had some fan mail recently, which made us very happy.
Yay! We like fan mail.
Yes, we love fan mail. Even if you guys just show us progress shots, that's perfectly fine. We can live vicariously through your progress shots. So you can contact us. Please do share our page on Facebook and beyond so that other people can share the Potter love that is CosPod. If you guys have suggestions, we are getting closer to the end of the year, our fifth year of podcasting. If you guys have suggestions for our end of year montage, please do send those in because we want to include your guys' favorite moments in our end of year montage. So please do send those. Otherwise, we will see you guys next episode in 125.
Bye, guys.